Welcome to the Refs Roundup for this week. This is a podcast where we discuss all things rugby league and the world of refereeing. I'm Casey Badger, and here with me is Gavin Badger. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Yeah, really well, thanks. So what do you think of round 23?
Round 23 shows why our game is so good and how competitive the game is. If you know, there was a few upsets. There was a few teams who did what they were expected to do. And, you know, the closeness of some of the scores in some of the games just shows, you know, that we've got a really competitive competition at the moment.
Yeah, it was a good weekend. I think anyone who does tipping competitions and stuff weren't too happy in trying to pick their winners. But like I said, it is very exciting that it seems like every year we get to this end of the season and there's still so much competition for whether it's the top eight or the top four or the minor premiership.
Yeah.
It's just such an open comp.
Yeah, even you know, we look at it and we've virtually got a set top eight, but that still doesn't mean that the games aren't exciting because, as you see, Canberra beating the Roosters on the weekend.
Yeah, Newcastle beating Penrith.
Yeah, so yeah. Any team is capable of beating any team, and I've said it that in the way the competition is now, a team only has to be down 5% on what they normally put out and they'll get beat no matter whether you're the top team or the bottom team.
Yeah, it's good for fans to still be able to show up to games or watch games at this end of the year, even if their teams are out of the eight, with the real prospect of knowing that they could still win that game.
Yeah, it's a good place to be.
Yeah, it's quite exciting. All right, so there's a few different topics we like to talk about on this podcast, and one of them is the law of the week. So we like to pick out something that happened in an NRL game on the weekend, which is a law that we might not often see, and sort of discuss that and let people get a bit of an insight into how those laws are applied. So the one that we've picked for this week is the out-of-play law.
Which is quite relevant for you this weekend, as it was a game that you were involved with, which had two of them, which is quite unusual.
Exactly right. So, yeah, it's a lot of people could go their whole first-grade career without ever having to call an out-of-play penalty. And like you said, we had two of them on Friday night in the Manly versus Gold Coast game. So, 5 minutes into the second half, Tom Trbojevic makes a half a break and Sean Lane runs through as a support player. Tom gets tackled around the legs and has a quick play the ball. So at that stage, Sean Lane was still in front of that point of the play the ball. And then Manly continued to play. Titans are on the back foot, so a bit of a rolling ruck there. Cherry Evans passes an inside ball to Dylan Walker, who then splits the defence, gets another pass to Trbojevic, who then offloads to Sean Lane, who runs under the sticks to score a try. But before he got to do that, the whistle was blown for a penalty. So that was something that is quite unusual and something which is very difficult for fans at the game and on TV to see, to understand why the whistle was just blown and why the try was disallowed.
Yeah, it's funny because I was sitting in the crowd at Brookvale Oval when this happened and there was a lot of fans around me who were sort of a bit dumbstruck as to what had happened, you know, because I think a lot of them thought that it was called back for a forward pass and couldn't understand why that wasn't a try. So the big thing you've got to understand in the difference between out of play and offside is that the first thing is that an out of play player cannot be put back onside in the normal ways that an offside player can. So he can't then go back past the last point. He can't then be run onside. So once he's out of play, he's out of play for that tackle.
So essentially the out of play player is someone who is in front of the previous ruck, the previous play the ball.
When the ball is played.
When the ball is played.
Yeah.
And then like you said, they can't be put back onside.
The majority, and this one was a weird one because it was in an attacking zone. The majority of times that these happen and nothing really comes of them are from kick returns. Mm. So you've got a kick return, you've got all the forwards coming back onside and they play two or three plays before they're all back. So that one's much more obvious and a lot easier as a referee to pick.
Yeah, well, that's the one that we had a little bit later in the game against Kevin Proctor. Same thing. So there was a Manly kick the ball downfield, Titans regather, play the ball, Kevin Proctor still coming back into an onside position when the ball's played. And then in the next play, he gets the ball.
Yeah. So, yeah, and this one's, you know, out of the box a bit because you've got a lead runner who's then in front of the play the ball after not receiving the ball.
And how on field, do you want to explain sort of how the referees and the touch judges work together to get those calls? So the referee who blew the penalty, John Stone, would he have seen that straight away himself? Or what assistance does he get from his team?
The thing with these ones is because the referee's main role is to focus on the football. So he's looking around the ruck and thereabouts. So a lot of the time the out-of-play players are behind the referee. They're coming from behind where the referee is. So it's a responsibility of the touch judges to get it. And in this one, in the the Sean Lane incident, we've had a touch judge on debut who actually gets it. So his first game in the NRL, and he's got to make a big call like that. And he makes it strong, and, you know, we save ourselves a video check by him being strong with his call. So, like you said, you might go throughout a career without even getting one. He got one in his first game. So the responsibility is on the touch judges in that case. They're also in the NRL level. We also have some assistance from the assist ref who can see that because it's in front of him.
Yeah. So speaking of the referee who blew that penalty, John Stone, he actually wasn't originally appointed to this game, but he ended up on the field. So about 18 minutes into the game, the head referee, Chris Butler, pulled up a bit sore in the hamstring after ruling a 20-metre restart. So I was on the touchline, and all I hear from him as he's running back for the 20-metre restart is, "Stoney, come downstairs." So talking to John Stone, who was the standby referee, sitting up in the old video referee's box where the standby referees sit with our match day coach. So that was Chris Butler asking John Stone to come down to the sidelines because obviously he'd done something to injure himself. So, Badge, you've had a bit of experience lately in this regard?
I've been trying to sort of not think about injuries to referees at the minute. Yeah, a couple of weeks ago, same place, Brookvale Oval. We're calling it the curse of Brookie at the minute. I had an Achilles injury 15 minutes left in the game, and I couldn't continue. And it's the first time in my career, actually. I've been around for a long time. It's the first time I've had to come off with an injury, and the subsequent weeks that I missed are the first weeks I've missed through injury in refereeing. So it was a pretty sad time for me. So, yeah, it's nice that you bring that back up, Case. Awesome. in that situation, I similar thing. I spoke to Todd Smith, who was the standby referee, and said, "Toddy, I think you need to come down here and start warming up because I don't know how long I'm going to last here, brother." And in that case, Todd Smith got on and one man's misery is another man's good fortune. That was his debut in the NRL, so he got an opportunity out of that. So, the curse of Brookie, very similar for me when I came off 2 weeks ago. Manly were way up, referee off, all of a sudden Penrith run them down. And in this game, even though it was only 20 minutes into the game, Manly were in full control. And then when John Stone comes on, they sort of fall in the wayside. So I'm sure Manly don't want any more referees going down in their games in the future.
Oh, I think lucky for them, they don't have another game at Brookvale this year. So that might help. I guess that's something a lot of people don't understand have never thought of is what happens to referees when they get injured, because just like anyone going out for a run or something, you can obviously get injured. You can roll an ankle, you can do a hamstring, you can do your calf, your Achilles, whatever it might be. So we always have a standby referee there at the ground who's already dressed and mic'd up and ready to go straight on the field in case anything should happen. All right, moving on to another discussion point this week. We've been seeing in the news lately that Usain Bolt is looking to play for the Mariners in the A-League, which should be interesting to watch. What are your thoughts there?
Well, Usain's an incredible athlete, and you don't get to be as good as he does without having a drive and a purpose, and he's not going to want to embarrass himself. So I'm sure he goes in knowing that he has some skill level to compete at that level. Otherwise, he wouldn't do it. And that he's going to put in the effort to do it. There's some people talking that, is it a publicity stunt? Is it this? Is it that? But when you're an athlete and a personality of his calibre, you don't do things to be embarrassed. Mm. So, I think he'll be reasonably successful. I don't know how far he'll take it, but, like I said, you don't go into those things to ruin your reputation.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. That's right. He's not going to go in to embarrass himself. But that that just got us thinking about what athletes would from other sports would we like to see join the NRL, or who would we think would make a good NRL player? Do you have any thoughts around that?
Most people might not know, but Casey and I are big NFL fans, so there's quite a few NFL players that I think would be great athletes in our game and would really, really succeed beyond expectations if they were to come across, just the size and the skill level of those guys. But if we're looking, more closer to home, for me, I was fortunate enough actually on Saturday night to watch Buddy Franklin run around. I think, there's a couple of reasons why I think Buddy would be an exceptional rugby league player.
He's a special athlete.
He is, and I think his size, you look at the sheer size of the guy, he's a big human being. So physically he'd match it. His athleticism is phenomenal. Mm. The way he can move around the field and the speed that he can do that and leap and catch and just the strength of him, you see the way he can just shoulder people off the ball.
Where do you reckon he could play? In the centres? Strong centre.
Me an edge back role, maybe. Back row, yeah, yeah. He, you wouldn't want him running at you too many times in a game of football, especially if he was to isolate, you know, one of your halves. So you wouldn't want him running at you all day. And, yeah, just the skill level of the guy, the way he can catch the ball under so much pressure. And for a big guy, he can kick the thing as well. Yeah. So. Yeah, he'd be an asset.
He'd be
an asset. In very similar vein as Caelan Ponga, I think. I think he'd be a similar footballer to Caelan Ponga.
Yeah.
Well, who would you be? I know we speak about athletes a lot. I know you've got a lot of Chiefs players, Kansas City Chiefs players that you'd think, but, thinking a little bit closer to home, anyone?
I just keep going to the NFL players because I remember a few years ago you and I were in New York and we watched the Patriots play the Jets. And Julian Edelman was returning the ball back on special teams. We just said, geez, imagine this bloke playing at fullback in the NRL, just the speed and the footwork that he has. And there's a few other players like that, like you said, for the Kansas City Chiefs, Travis Kelce, I think he would be outstanding. Last year you and I were over there and we were looking at the size of him in real life and we sort of said, geez, he looked like Nelson Asafa Solomona. And you look at the speed and the footwork of Travis Kelce with the size of Nelson, imagine how damaging that would be.
It would be insane.
Yeah, and then the other one was obviously my favourite athlete, JJ Watt.
Your favourite athlete or you just got a massive crush on him?
Oh, a bit of both. so obviously defensive player with the Texans. Similar vein as like a Jason Taumalolo, you just see him just being a big wrecking ball, good feet, good hands. I think
possibly one of the hugest humans on the planet as
massive,
well.
Massive, isn't he?
His arms are as big as my body.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to see. So another, I guess, exciting for some people and hard to deal with for other people moment last week was the Penrith Newcastle game where we saw something which has become quite unusual in the game now, where we had a brawl and we saw a number of players symbioned. We had four players symbioned and ultimately five charged by the match review committee. So I just wanted to have a bit of a talk through of how referees handled this incident on the field, what they do, what our processes are, as well as how that process is different at lower levels where they don't have the bunker or any video technology to help out. So what were the referees aiming to do at the time in their positioning, in how they separate teams to try and take control of that incident?
Yeah, well, at the NRL level, we're blessed because we have the bunker and the technology that comes with that. So in this situation, once all that's happening, even whilst that scuffle's going on, the guys in the bunker are already looking. So they're already trying to clear players, find which players are involved and aggressors and stuff like that. So by the time everything's separated, the referees already have some idea of what's happened. But in saying that, on field, we still have a massive role to play because we are the eyes and ears to the bunker as well. So we can then tip the bunker into looking for things so the process is a lot quicker. And in this one on the weekend, you had Alan Shortle, who was the assist ref in the game, who was actually virtually commentating the things that were happening in front of him so that the bunker knew what he was seeing. So if a player's name was mentioned, they could then go straight to that player and sort that out. We also have some, obviously, strategies around stuff like this as referees, and I'll probably get you to talk a little bit about that at the lower levels without the technology, and we talk about the three-point star when you've only got the referee and the two touch judges and how you go about covering as many people as you can and trying to get as much information and trying to get as many people that are involved with just the limited resources you have.
Yeah, so ultimately, what we want to do is to cover all angles. So if there's a brawl, generally in a bit of a circle, and we've got three people, so a referee and two touch judges, we want to get that triangle view of it. So we don't want two of us standing a metre or two apart looking at the same thing, because then we're going to miss something on the other side of the brawl. Or if a brawl, like a two or three players break away from that, we want a referee or a touch judge staying with that breakaway group to also have vision on that. Once it's calmed down and we start to separate the players, one of the big things we talk about is giving ourselves time and space. So what we want to do is separate the teams, get as much distance between the two teams as we can before the referee and the touch judges come together to discuss what they've seen. So they may have talked through the incident, like you said Alan Shortle did, so he nominated a player that he saw throwing a punch or a player that he saw instigate something, talking through it. So then the referee and the touch judge talk through what they've seen, work out what they're going to do before calling the players over to deal with them. So I guess that's something that could have maybe been handled a bit better on the weekend by the by the team there in terms of separating the players? Because I guess it wasn't ideal that the players started to come back together, and especially after the first sin binning, I think it was of Danny Levi, he starts to walk off the field and goes past the Penrith team. And then I think you may have gotten some flashbacks to a few years ago.
Brookvale Oval again,
the old Battle of Brookvale with Manly and Melbourne, which, talk through that incident.
Yeah, well, and I think we get at our level, at the elite level, where we're fortunate enough to have all those, you know, protection behind us, and the fact that we're dealing with professional athletes, that we don't get this happen a lot, that we get a bit sort of blasé about it, and we sort of don't go through all our processes correctly because we just don't assume, we actually assume that things are going to be sweet, where, you know, and, you know, I was fortunate enough to watch a Sydney Shield game on the weekend where that's not the case at lower levels, and that's your skill set you have coming through the grades, where sometimes when we get to the NRL level, we sort of switch off a little bit and just expect that, you know, because of what we're dealing with and all the cameras, we're going to be sweet. You know, in the day at Brookvale when, you know, Shane Hayne and myself, you know, we sim bin Glenn Stewart and then send him on his way and, you know, not thinking, and, you know, send Adam Blair 2 seconds later and they follow each other up, and next thing you know, we've got 26 players at each other and, you know, some staff as well. So, and that was on us because, you know, end of the day, the two players have a responsibility not to do that, but we also, as officials, need to understand that the ramifications of our actions, and we should have been better in that situation and
to control that,
and to control that better. Which, you know, the guys at lower levels, and, you know, even you go all the way down to grassroots football and park football, you know, if they don't do that correctly, they're dealing with a lot tougher situations than I am in the NRL level.
Yeah, that's right. So, yeah, I guess for us as a group, the NRL level, that was a big learning point for us this weekend, is to stick to those processes which we all used coming through the ranks.
And it's something that we did as a group. So we sat down and we watched that as a group, and, you know, we all learned out of that.
Yeah. Something we like to highlight on this podcast is a bit of GPS data of the referees to sort of show, I guess, the physical nature of what we do, and give a bit of a shout out to.
And yes, we do class ourselves as athletes, so we do use GPS data, and there is stats, and we do look at different things throughout the week.
We have a full-time analyst, and we have our strength and conditioning staff who gather all the GPS data the same as a club would.
Yeah, so we don't just turn up on the weekend, referee our game and go home, as many people would believe.
So there are three awards that we sort of give out each week in the NRL squad. One is the marathon runner of the week, so whichever referee ran the most kilometres within one game. One is what we call the gazelle of the week, which is whichever referee or touch judge hit the fastest speed in a game. And the other one is our Urgency of the Week award. So do you want to talk a little bit around that?
Yeah, the urgency is based around your acceleration and deceleration. And as referees, and especially as assist referees, and I would assume most weeks this is going to be taken out by an assist referee because of the movement pattern that we do behind the ruck. And it's all about how quick you can get in and how quick you can get out. And, you know, that's relevant to us because if you labour in and you slow in or slow out, you're going to get yourself in the way, you're going to get in the way of, you know, dummy halves coming in, you're going to get in the way of support players. So For us to be urgent, and it's something that our strength and conditioning staff work really, really hard on, and, you know, making sure that, you know, our drive out and our top speed from start is really good. So that's something that the guys sort of all look at and want to grab hold of. So
yeah, so that's our prized award of the week, and this week it went to Peter Goff in the Sharks and Cowboys game. So
yeah, I want the data checked. There's got to be an issue with the data.
Then our Gazelle of the Week also went to Peter Goff in the same game. So he hit 28.44 kilometres per hour, which was our top speed of the week. And our Marathon Runner of the Week went to Gavin Reynolds in the Manly Gold Coast game, where he ran just under 11.5 kilometres.
So, yeah, which is insane at Brookvale Oval. That's a heavy track.
There's some sore calves the next day.
If it was a horse track, they wouldn't let him run on it at some stages. It can be quite heavy and tight on the calves.
When you look at that data, the 11.5 kilometres, that puts the referee's distances sort of above what any sort of players run during a match.
Yeah.
So that's why we class ourselves as athletes, is that we're running quite high distances while still making a lot of decisions and talking under fatigue.
Well, and you look at that data and you break it down, you look at distances covered, and then you look at top speeds that guys are getting at, and they're sporadic as well. So it's like, you know, if if you aren't prepared for that, the body's going to break down. Yeah. That's where you're going to get soft tissue injuries for sure when you're running those distances. That's hamstrings and Achilles and calves. At those distances and those speeds, you know, if we weren't prepared, we wouldn't be able to get through it.
So on the same theme of just recognising our NRL referees with that GPS data, we also like to give a bit of recognition to a grassroots referee each week. This week that recognition goes to Harrison Baisari from Parramatta Referees Association. He's the son of the great David Baisari. You had a bit of experience with him?
Yeah, I refereed Dave a little bit, and I reckon it hurt when Harrison walked up to Dave and said, I want a referee.
I want to be a referee.
But in having some dealings with Dave over the last couple of years, he's very proud of Harrison, and he says it's one of the best things that Harrison's ever done, and he has a greater appreciation for what we do. And I've actually seen him pull people up for abusing referees on the sideline, so that's a big change for Dave, but... All for the good.
So Harrison refereed the final at our National Primary School Championships, which were just held in Adelaide over the weekend, and those championships are the first level of a pathway for any of our referees. That's the first, I guess, step on a representative pathway. So it's a pretty big deal for Harrison.
Yeah, it is. And those national championships, you know, are run by the NRL and guys that are involved. And, you know, you've got guys like Shane Hayne and Stephen Clark who oversee those programs. So they've got some quality people looking after them. And, yeah, as you say, it's the start and it's the progression of your career as a referee. You start to go to those championships and you've been talent ID'd and, you know, you'll be pushed further up the pathway.
Yeah. All right, so before we finish up, I just want to mention what my moment of the week is. And for me, it was the announcement of the revamped All-Stars game. I've always been a big fan of the Indigenous All-Stars, seeing the passion and pride that comes with representing their culture, and to see the revamped version of it with the... New Zealand with the Maori All-Stars. As soon as it was announced, I said to you, so do you want to go to Melbourne next year for it? So I think we'll both definitely head down there to watch. So that's definitely my moment of the week. It's something I'm excited for.
Yeah, and it's a great concept, and I was fortunate enough to be part of the first ever All-Stars game as a referee. And, it was something that I, you know, will always, you know, cherish, and it's a moment that I was really proud of to be able to go out there and be a part of something that was a part of my culture. So very proud. My moment of the week is, you know, I'm old school and I've been around for a little while, and just seeing, you know, the sun shining, afternoon football at Leichhardt Oval, you know, to me, as far as the game goes, I don't think we could ever lose that, you know, little bit of tribalism, you know, that community feel, and, you know, just those old school stadiums. I really enjoy sitting on the hill at Leichhardt. I enjoy sitting on the hill at Brookvale. You know, I love going to those grounds, and I love the game to always have, whether, you know, it may only be, you know, sporadic and here and there, but I'd love to be able to still...
Always have a place for it.
Yeah, always have an afternoon day in the sun at Leichhardt.
Yeah. Well, this weekend there's plenty happening, heading into round 24, a lot of big clashes in the NRL that are vital to the top eight, the Warriors-Panthers game, the Roosters-Broncos game. We've got a lot of junior league grand finals happening, you know, across the country this weekend, so good luck to everyone involved in them. In the New South Wales ISP, there's still 9 teams who can make the top eight, and pretty much every position in that eight is up for grabs, and that's similar in Queensland ISC. You've got a team with the Falcons sitting in 9th position who play off against the first place team, and if they win, they could potentially make the eight. So plenty of exciting football happening. What does your weekend look like, Badge? What are you up to?
Just recently got my appointment for this weekend, so I'm off to the Gold Coast. Always good to head up to the Gold Coast. And fortunate enough, this week I'm running with Matt Noyan, who is making his debut as a lead referee. So that's a pretty big moment in a referee's career. That means that, you know, obviously what you've done as the assist ref over a few seasons is then put you in a position where you can go out there and run the team. And lead ref is like being the captain of a footy side. You know, you go out there and you've got to make the decisions, and you've got to control your team, and, you know, and make sure that, you know, the whole, from the minute you get your appointment to the minute you finish your game, that that's all controlled and looked after. So it's a pretty big step in Matty's career, and one that the whole squad is proud of. And, you know, knowing the character of Matty, it's, you know, going to be one of many.
Yeah, excellent. And I'm off to New Zealand, so find out today on a Tuesday that I fly out to New Zealand on a Thursday. And back Saturday, and I think you're not back till Sunday.
Yeah, I come back Sunday. So
maybe I'll see you next week when we do this podcast again.
Maybe catch up for lunch next Tuesday before the podcast.
Sounds good. All right. Well, thanks for listening to this week's Refs Roundup. We hope you enjoy this round of football.
And get out to a game this weekend if you can.